Welcome to The Last American Vagabond. I am joined today by Ben Swan to discuss something we've both been talking about this entire time, which is a lot of the ways you are being deceived around the narrative around COVID-19. We're also going to be discussing today his platform that he's been working on that I've been posting on as well, that is something that is a platform that's out there to help you get the truth out in a time when it's been never been more difficult in history, in my opinion. Thank you so much for joining today, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to have you. So I want to kind of go through, as I've been doing with a lot of different people I've been speaking to in the last so many months, around kind of the evolution of your perception around what's been happening to start off today. And then we can get into a lot of the different things that we've seen and how it's changed, masks, the illusion around natural immunity and so many different things. So why don't we just start off with, you know, when this first started, wherever that was for you, how you started to pick up on this story, what was your opinion of it when it first started? And then what has it become now, and the contrast, and then, and what was it that changed your opinion over that process?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because very few people even go back to the beginning of where this all started. So I remember, you know, I was working in DC at the time, because I do a lot of freelance work there. In fact, I'm there right now in Washington, D.C. And so when I was in D.C., we were doing stories about the reports of this, coronavirus. At the time, it wasn't called COVID-19. They were just saying a coronavirus that was coming from China, people getting sick in Wuhan. And actually, at the time, my suspicion about it really was about the WHO, the fact that the WHO was saying it was nothing and it was not a big deal, and people didn't need to worry about it. Certainly, they didn't think that travel needed to stop, and that we started see that China was beginning to quarantine. And so I remember seeing that and feeling like the WHO was very untrustworthy in the way they were handling it. They seemed to be acting in a way where China was dictating to them the way to cover it and the way to discuss it with media. And so, you know, as a journalist, you know, our job is to be critical. Our job is to look at what's happening and to question it. And I saw very few people questioning it. What was interesting was how the narrative went from a group of journalists and kind of talking heads on TV saying there's nothing to see here and nothing to worry about, including people like Dr. Fauci, to suddenly flipping the script and saying it's a huge deal, shut everything down. And they did it so quickly that I think it caught a lot of people off guard.
I completely agree. And what's in two points that are questions I want to ask really is, to what degree do you feel there was global coordination in those actions? And do you think it's possible that there was more collaboration between the way China was influenced in WHO and the direction this went with the United States and other governments than them being at odds, essentially?
I think that the WHO was directly influenced by China on what to say, how to treat it, how to talk about it. I think that the U.S. has very little sway over the WHO. There are really two groups that have sway. One is, of course, China, and the other one is the Gates Foundation. The Gates Foundation is the largest single contributor to WHO in the world, larger than any government in the world, larger than even China. So China has an enormous amount of influence, and I think that, you know, and this is speculation on my part, just from what I've seen, I think that is less about their financial contribution to the entity that is the WHO and more to the leadership, the financial contributions they're making behind the scenes to the leadership. Now, I have no evidence or proof, I should say that, of going to, you know, the head of the WHO. But the head of the WHO is an incredibly corrupt person, no question about that. And the head of the WHO, who, when he was working in Ethiopia as the health minister there, watched people die from Ebola and lied about it on a regular basis, lied about deaths and about viruses. I mean, this is his MO. And so he is not a trustworthy individual to begin with. And the fact that he was basically repeating whatever China, line China gave him was a very bad sign. But the U.S. has almost no authority. I think what we began to see, guys, is a convergence of opportunists at the same time. So China had their opportunists, the Gates Foundation had theirs, Fauci and the gain of function crew had theirs. And so everyone began trying to play off of each other in order to make their opportunity work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it really, it seems to justify or explain a lot of the actions we've seen since then that don't necessarily fit together. People just in their individual situations trying to benefit on a situation, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste, as we've referenced many times, right?
Yeah.
Well, so and then taking that to the next part then, so after this evolved, how did your opinion change, and what was it specifically that began to make you go, okay, you know, there's something that here more so than just cut, you know, opportunistic actions?
Yeah. Well, for one thing, if you go back almost 18 months ago. So I was one of the first reporters anywhere to uncover the gain of function payments that were made from the NIH to EcoHealth Alliance and then EcoHealth Alliance to the Wuhan lab, right? Because there were people saying, oh, the Obama administration, they were supporting this and sending money to the Wuhan lab. And the statement they were making wasn't coming out correctly. And so I began researching it to find out, well, where is this money going? And came across this group, EcoHealth Alliance, and said, oh, wait a minute, there was money going to this group, right? And this group was able to pass it from there. And there's been a lot that's come out since then. And I think that's all become almost a point now where it's just a given. Like anyone who's awake at all, and even those who aren't, have an understanding now that there was gain of function research is going on from about 2002 until about 2014, then banned in the United States in 2014, and then started overseas and being outsourced to the Wuhan lab, among other places. Six different labs were doing it. But what's important about that is at some point, we began to see, we're talking about the convergence of opportunists. These opportunists began to look at this and say, well, wait a minute. You know, if we can say that we're in this terrible pandemic right now, and we can say that, you know, everyone's at risk, let's just see how much power we do have, right? And so it almost became, for lack of a better term, a contest, right, among governors to see how many governors could institute new rules without it being law, without state legislatures being involved, being able to impose by fiat, by simply declaring that they have the authority to shut down churches and to close businesses and decide which businesses could be open and which couldn't, right? The strip club can be open, the liquor store can be open, but the church cannot be open, and the, you know, the local restaurant cannot be open, but the Best Buy can be open and the Walmart, you know what I mean? And so we saw this happening. So I think that was part of it. And then I think at the very top of it, you have people like Fauci, who was spending a lot of energy, Peter Daszak spending a lot of energy trying to hide the origin of the virus. Because remember, if the origin of the virus is proven to have come from gain-of-function research funded by the U.S. and conducted in the Wuhan lab, if that is proven to be true, then why were we listening for 18 months to advice on how to stop a pandemic from the people creating a pandemic, right? And so there's been a convergence of opportunists, but also the need to suppress as much information as possible about where this thing came from, because if that comes out, then the same people who are creating the oppression right now, removed from their spots and possibly prosecuted.
Right, exactly. And that's where this comes down to is accountability. And that's obviously one of the most clear paths to who would be responsible. But in that conversation, do you have any thoughts on the variation within that narrative, lab leak versus bioweapon, or whether they're necessarily the same thing, essentially? Because there's different points there where it's an accident or China versus the US, whereas I kind of see it all in one kind of clump here, whether, like you discussed, outsourcing this research across from the US to China. So what are your thoughts on lab leak versus bioweapon or none?
So it's a couple things. Actually, I just released a piece, might not have seen it yet, but we just released a piece about a week ago. That took a look at a 2018 document, and it was a proposal submitted by EcoHealth Alliance and Peter Daszak to DARPA. And essentially what they were saying in this proposal, and you can read it for yourself, I mean, it's all in black and white. It's, you don't have to, you know, create conspiracy theories around it. You just read what Peter Daszak wrote, right? It's a 75-page proposal. And essentially what they're asking for are a couple of things, and it's pretty fascinating, including they want to take bats that are in the wild, right? Dr. Shi in the Wuhan lab and Peter Daszak, EcoHealth Alliance, they want to go out, they want to take this gain-of-function coronavirus that they've been working on, this SARS-CoV, in this case, they hadn't called it SARS-CoV-2 yet, it was just called a SARS-CoV, and they wanted to inject it into the backbones of wild bats in China. And then, and this is part is especially interesting, they also wanted to inject other bats with the vaccine that they were creating that would combat SARS-CoV. And so the person who was in charge of that part of it is Ralph Baric, who was the big head of gain of function in the United States, works at UNC, University of North Carolina. And he was the big proponent to DARPA for years of gain of function. Since 2002, he's the guy who wanted gain of function research on the SARS, original SARS virus that came out in 2002. And so what we see there when we look at that picture is, wait a minute, you have, it's not just a bioweapon. It's not just making these particular viruses and creating them in a lab and making them more transmissible to humans. It was also a vaccine project. We're going to create as contagious of a SARS virus as we can, while we're simultaneously going to create a vaccine, which, by the way, all of that coincides with the fact that Moderna and their mRNA vaccine suddenly had in record time a vaccine created. And they were able to do that with the deal they signed with NIH back in December of 2019. And then suddenly, oh yeah, we have the technology. Well, and the question is, as a journalist, was the technology that Moderna used for the mRNA vaccine, was it actually property of UNC? Because if you look at the patent documents, not one single scientist or doctor from Moderna is listed as a vaccine co-creator, even though Moderna is the entity that supposedly had the vaccine. So now I may have taken you down a little bit of a side road there, but the reason I say all that is to say that there's a couple of very important things here. When we talk about, was this a bioweapon? Very possibly, yes. Was it a lab leak? Also, very possibly, yes. Here's the key that we don't have an answer to. Was this virus being created in a lab for the purpose of being a bioweapon, and it got out too early, that the timing was wrong? And is that why, in the beginning, the Chinese, why Fauci said, it's not a big deal, it's not a big deal, because they were hoping it would go away and they could hide the whole thing? Oh, no, what they were doing in this lab and the fact that it got out. We know that there were a number of Chinese scientists inside of that Wuhan lab who, as early as October of 2019, became sick as employees, and they exhibited symptoms very similar to COVID, right? There were, I believe it was six. And so we don't know. Were those six employees actually, did they come down with COVID? And then that's how it got out into the public. That's how it became released. It didn't happen in December. It happened all the way back in October. Very possibly. So this is just my theory as I look at all the different pieces. My theory is that it was created as a defense project. It was created with military money. I have documents that I've reported on that show as many as $40 million were spent by DARPA on these gain-of-function projects. So there was definitely a military component to it. The question is, was it intentional for it to get out? I do not believe, from what I've seen so far, that it was intentional that it got out when it did. Was it eventually get out? Yes. So that might have been, actually, through all of this, a huge blessing that they didn't finish their research. They didn't get to the end of it, and it got out early, because the reality is it's, 99.97% of the population who contracts it does not die from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really interesting, the many different parts of that discussion that are completely ignored. I mean, you could say that about every part of this conversation. But right. As you've probably seen, that there's examples of, I think at least off the top of my head, 7 or 8 different countries that have said, well, we have examples of this being seen in 2020, even 2019. One, Calgary University, made an argument about 2018 in like waste samples. There's a lot of conversation about that. And people just dismiss this stuff, That's a whole rabbit hole in and of itself, talking about Fort Detrick and the leaks around there, the vape illness. There's all these different questions, right? And so it's interesting. And I'm pretty much on the same line there in regard to thinking about how it's kind of one and the same, whether it's a lab leak or whether it's a bioweapon, or if that's the same thing. Because it I've always said, in regard to gain of function research, it's absurd, which I think Dr. Boyle has said the same thing, to argue that they're going to make something that's never been seen before for the impossible chance that that will show up organically and we'll have a vaccine ready. I don't know why anybody would buy something like that.
Reality is that if you look back at the history of coronaviruses, because coronaviruses obviously have been in nature for a very long time, right? But we haven't ever seen a widespread coronavirus outbreak that has killed lots of people. And there's a reason for that, because coronaviruses are actually inferior to most viruses in terms of their ability to have lethality towards humans. In fact, again, going back all the way to 2002, remember the SARS coronavirus that broke out in 2002, the media told us it was the end of the world. We were about to see, again, the Spanish flu, right? And what happened instead was that SARS self-eradicated. Only a few thousand people contracted it. A few hundred people died, and it self-eradicated. There was no even need for a vaccine. And the reason it self-eradicated is because it could not transmit well to humans and attach to human cells. That's the reality of coronaviruses. It's why MERS and the bird flu, and none of these coronaviruses have ever been a widespread dangerous phenomenon. And if you read the writings of people like Ralph Baric laments this when he creates these proposals and grant applications. He's actually sending these grant applications out, lamenting the fact that these coronaviruses are not strong enough and don't attach well enough. And that's why we need to work on creating this. And also think back just a few months ago, at the height of the coronavirus pandemic, before we saw the introduction of the vaccine, there were a number of articles that were written that essentially said, hey, there's a big concern about the fact that COVID is going away too fast in order to be able to be studied. Remember that? Mm-hmm. There were a number of these stories, a number of these articles that came out, and that is hugely problematic, because if scientists are saying, oh no, we need to slow this down and keep this virus around longer on one hand, and on the other hand, continue to take away every civil right you have as a citizen because of a virus, there's a problem here.
Right. And I don't know if you saw as well, this was maybe a couple of weeks ago, that story is coming back up again. The same argument was made in another recent article that now it's going away too fast. Like the fact that they can revisit that same narrative in the midst of what you just said, but at the same time, we have to stop it because it's killing everybody. It just, there's so many contradictions in this, which brings me to one of the parts which I'm really fascinated. I actually just gave a speech about this. I was going to say fascinated as I jumped my own words. I gave a speech about this in Franklin around the COVID illusion, like the larger way, which, by the way, for those listening, doesn't necessarily mean that everything is fake. It just means that that there's a lot of parts about this that are an illusion, that they're lying to you about, that they're manipulating the data on. So from your perspective, what do you think is the largest illusion taking place, like the PCR test or things like that, that what is your opinion of what is the driving illusion to why we're being misrepresented about what's happening, or they're misrepresenting what's happening?
Well, I don't know that I can give you the largest illusion. I would say that there are a lot of illusions, and I think you're absolutely right. One of the problems is people look at this through such a binary lens, right? So either COVID is everything that the media tells you it is and that Fauci tells you it is, it's everything they're saying, or it's nothing. Mm. Come on. That's a ridiculous way to look at the world.
Right.
You can say that you absolutely believe that COVID is a real virus. COVID-19 has killed people. There are people who have died from it, but there are even illusions around that. So who's died from it? Well, people who are morbidly obese, people who are very elderly. The average age of death for COVID is something like 79 to 80 years old, when the average lifespan is 78 in the United States. So natural causes will take out more people at that age than COVID will. The illusion that children need to have this, when we have more kids who have died from suicide during this time than have died from COVID, but we have to continue to mask them and vaccinate them all. Or the illusion, how about this, that vaccines work, right? And this is the biggest illusion, I think, of all. So you asked for the biggest. The biggest illusion is, we have redefined as a culture the meaning of the word vaccine, and we've done it in a very short amount of time. And we've gone from saying, listen, if you get vaccines, if you believe in vaccines, there's nothing wrong with believing in them. But what is wrong is to say a vaccine is A, and now because your therapeutic gene therapy that you're injecting in your arm does not do what A used to represent, you're now redefining it as something totally different. So the vaccine does not, we know for a fact, prevent you from getting COVID,
right?
Period. It does not prevent you from transmitting COVID, period. And so then that raises the question, so what does it do? And if you look at every country around the world, Israel, Singapore, the UK, Ireland, Scotland, every country that has had massive programs in which to vaccinate the population, and you watch, go to worldometers.com and look up those countries, right? Worldometers, all they're showing you are cases, month by month, year by year, and day by day. And if you look at the cases, I just posted something about this the other day. Singapore has more COVID cases now than they've ever had. And they have skyrocketed in the last 2 months, skyrocketed in terms of active COVID cases, when they had almost flatlined before the introduction of the vaccine. And so when you introduce the vaccine and you give it to people, and now all of a sudden cases are going up, what is the vaccine good for? What does it actually do? And that's I think the biggest illusion of all, that if you get injected, somehow you're making everyone safer, and no one can tell us how.
I completely agree. I mean, and the craziest part about that, and everything you said, I completely agree with, and we both probably verified this with data on our shows, is that we're not over here going, therefore, nobody should be allowed to take it. We're saying it should be your choice. And the other side of the argument is, well, you're a bad person and you should take it because you're hurting people. And we're being framed as the ones that are crazy or irrational. And it just adds to the same thing you just described. I mean, you're changing definitions to meet what you want and acting like people. It's irrational. This is why I actually am trying to find a psychologist to interview in regard to the mass psychosis angle of this, because there is a level of that. I mean, since I brought it up, do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I think there absolutely is mass psychosis here. But I also believe that part of that comes from, I'm not a psychologist, but I believe part of that comes from the idea that if you have convinced a significant portion of the population to inject themselves with something that they maybe didn't want or didn't need, and then they wind up sick anyways, right? They wind up contagious anyways, or in some cases, they wind up dead anyways, because there are people who are dying who are fully vaccinated. To say otherwise is a lie. It doesn't mean all. It doesn't even mean most. But here's the thing. If anyone out there says, I don't want this, and you're told, but you must have it to protect yourself and protect everyone else, you go and you get it, and then you die, or you become injured, or you simply continue to spread it around, then you were deceived. And I believe that people have an innate desire to believe that the people in authority around them have their best interest in mind. And when you begin to shatter that idea that they don't really care about you, that they're forcing you into compliance and it's not really for your own good, it forces you to take action. It forces you to do something different. And people don't want to do something different. They just want to believe that we're all in this together. They want to believe the bumper stickers and say we're all on the same side and that these people are not bad people. They want what's best for me. So I'll go out and I'll do this thing. And I think there is a psychosis that says as long as we can all agree on the lie, then the lie becomes the truth. And those of you, by the way, who are not vaccinated, those of you who refuse to get vaccinated, you're puncturing that lie. You're puncturing what they're telling you, and that's why people are so angry. That's why there's so much vitriol for those who will not get vaccinated, because you're not going along with what everyone else is doing.
Exactly. That's exactly kind of the sentiment I've been seeing from people, these psychologists having this discussion, that they've created this level of, even if whether it's based on facts or not, of comfort, where you find a community within that lie. And the moment we come in and go, but you're wrong, and show the facts, it brings them back down to that level of anxiety, and they will do anything to get out of that. You know, and this has been seen throughout many different circumstances throughout history, and we're just watching it play out again. It's
absolutely
quite incredible. Now, on that note, speaking of the illusion as well, can you give me your thoughts on the unvaxxed versus vax kind of pandemic conversation, like where they're basically, to make it a fine point, the illusion around whether you're vaxxed or unvaxxed based on 14 days after your shot or so on. You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think none of it makes any sense, right? One of the most difficult things about having conversations about vaccination is that there's no policy, there's no order to it, there's no common sense or logic, and of course there is no science to it, right? So when you hear things like, you know, people who are vaccinated with one shot, who are vaccinated with two shots, those who I think you're alluding to, those who are fully vaccinated with two shots, now have to be like 5 to 10 days beyond that shot in order to be considered vaccinated. Or you get a booster and that's supposed to keep you vaccinated for 10 more days than you were vaccinated the first time. And so there's no science to any of this. And then of course you throw into all that the argument of natural immunity, which gets thrown out. So I spent a month in Europe, went around and looking at all the different protests there and what was happening in those countries, Greece, Spain, Italy, and France. And one thing that is very different in Europe compared to the United States is that in Europe, they readily accept natural immunity. They see natural immunity as just as valid as the vaccines. Now, there's a study out that shows that that's actually not true, that natural immunity is far superior to the vaccines. And so we have this discussion and debate now that's going on about, you know, who's vaccinated, who's not, who gets fired. Look, if you want to have a hospital and you want to have nurses who will protect the sick, as all these politicians are saying they do, you should be actively going out every day and recruiting nurses who have natural immunity. Right. You should be paying nurses with natural immunity bonuses to come work for you, increasing their salary if you have natural immunity, because you are the safest person on the planet when it comes to dealing with a patient who has COVID. You're the safest. And you're also the safest for the person who doesn't have COVID, because you can't pass it to them. The idea that you would instead go out and recruit nurses who are vaccinated, who can pass the virus onto their patient and not even know it, is insane. So I think that's what's so hard about having these conversations, is that if we could just go like rewind the world 24 months and say, remember, let's start again here. And when we talk about scientific things, we have to use science, right? We cannot use politics. We'd be so much better off. And one thing that has happened is that the establishment in this country and politicians in this country have lit fire to science. And as a result of that, you know, say, oh, you know about just as well as I do, right? Misinformation, this conversation about misinformation all the time. Oh, there's so much misinformation out there. They are the purveyors of misinformation and have sown seeds of it everywhere by refusing to acknowledge basic science. And that basic science of natural immunity, that goes back to 430 BC. Right, the plague of Athens was the first time in recorded Western history that we have any kind of commentary about the fact that people who got the virus are now immune to the virus. We've known it for thousands of years, but suddenly COVID doesn't apply to it. It's crazy.
It is, and that, to that point, just to circle back on it, the idea that people after 14 days would be considered fully vaxxed, but anybody within that time frame beforehand goes down as unvaccinated. And that just speaks to the illusion. So if you have one shot and you die, you go as unvaccinated, then adds to the number. If you have two shots but 13 days, you still go down as unvaccinated or not fully vaccinated. And it's just incredible to see that that's a willful choice to misrepresent what's happening in so many different ways. And since you touched on natural immunity, that's a big one for me that I've been trying to cover for quite a while, as you have, and showing people that there's it really doesn't come down to whether you believe in it or you think it's there or whatever. It comes down to the fact that they are actively ignoring the science from the outlets they're telling us to trust. That's what blows me away the most. I'm pointing the Lancet, the WHO, NIH, JCI Insights, I mean, Science Magazine, Science, all of them, as I know you've seen, are saying robust, lasting, you know, T-cell immunity, memory B, and yet then Fauci can go on a show, I think a week ago, and say, well, we don't know for sure. It just blows me away that that's happening.
Yes. And he says, we don't know for sure. And so it just gets dismissed. Like, this is crazy talk. We don't even accept it. And so what is sown in that is complete distrust in media, which was already there, right? But it's much worse than it was. And it's, I think it goes beyond distrust. I shouldn't even use that term. That's not even the right term. Distrust in media indicates that I don't trust media. But seeing media for what it is, right, which is a foe, is a force that is actually attempting to harm you, becomes a whole other view. And there are tens of millions of people who now see the world this way, right? That those who are in the scientific community, medical community, the bureaucratic medical community, certainly, politicians, media, big tech, all these forces are seen no longer as just they don't care about you. It's that they actively want to harm you. And that's causing a divide in this country and globally. Again, I can tell you that from having been in different countries around the world this year, there is a divide happening globally between those two groups. And it's a pretty scary thing.
It's very interesting. And I think that there's a lot of actions that have been taken around this, deceptive and otherwise, that have driven people, like you're saying, to become aware of it. And I don't think that was anticipated. One of the thoughts I wanted to one of the topics I want to get your thoughts on is specifically in regard to natural immunity and how a lot of us have been fighting to get people to acknowledge something, like you pointed out, we shouldn't have to fight to get acknowledged. It's an obvious reality that's been there. And so right now I'm seeing this transition to where it's as if we're about to win the small battle, where they're grudgingly accepting natural immunity for these immunity passports. But does that not strike you as sort of a trapdoor in a way, to where we're suddenly now falling into accepting immunity passports as opposed to we should be not having to prove one way or the other what our medical situation is? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that in terms of those immunity passports, that this idea that we're all going to be subjected to it is frankly insane. Like, I think that there's this idea that you're going to have to walk around with an ID on you that proves that you've been vaccinated. And how many times? One time, two times, four times, six times, yearly, annually? Right. Is that what it is? And so this idea that you have to do that. But again, you got to remember, Ryan, this is all coming from people who say you don't have to have an ID to go vote. Because right. It's racist and it's terrible. But you have to have an ID in order to go eat.
Contradiction.
It's just totally nuts.
They're everywhere. Yeah. I mean, so really for me, it's about, if you are allowed to step in and say, but I have natural immunity, which you then have to continue to test to prove to them, it basically steps into the control they have over the situation, right? So you're still allowing yourself to be controlled by those immunity passports, So it just, I wonder whether that's just a way to get us to fall in line with that in general, which brings me to two points that I think we can kind of finish on before I want to talk about your platform. And that is the discussion of masks, but specifically, and I would love your thoughts on that. I know we're pretty much on the same page about, and I can even just bring up one of your articles as we talk about it. Yeah. But I had a discussion about nanoworms. I don't know if you've seen this, but this is a mainstream, is on sci.org, where it's a new discussion they're having about a spray, a water-based spray of nanotechnology, nanoworms they're calling them, on the masks in order to help it stop and kill the virus on a mask that's supposed to be safe and effective and works already, right? Which makes no sense. But thoughts on masks, if you want to talk about that for a second, but give me your thoughts on where this kind of nanotechnology use is going. And I'd like to talk about technocracy and the Great Reset to finish up before we talk about your website.
Sure, absolutely. Well, listen, I think my view on masks is pretty well documented. I've done a lot of reports on them. The bottom line is that all the science from the very beginning has shown that wearing a cloth mask on your face, wearing a non-medical grade mask, does nothing for you. I mean, does nothing. And we know this going all the way back to studies that have been done for the last 10 years that specifically looked at whether or not masks prevent viruses. They don't prevent viruses. Viruses are too small and they travel through. That is a fact. The other fact is, when I first started reporting on this well over a year ago, of course, I got attacked for it. And, oh, well, but you're not considering COVID. These are flu. It's not COVID. But the reality is that it stops droplets. It does not stop viruses. And that's been proven. And since then, by the way, there have been a number of studies that have been done to show the effect of mask wearing, not only on adults, but on children, right? And what they find is that not only do you not see a decrease in viral infection as a result of masks, but there are an increase in a whole lot of other things. So you just pulled up that report we did about mask wearing, but the reality is mask wearing for kids is more harmful to a child than COVID is. And what does it show? A massive German study shows the psychological damage that occurs to kids. It also shows the amount of carbon that kids breathe in. And it's something like 60 times the amount that they're supposed to be breathing in within a 3-minute period. So it's insane to mask children, to mask adults, to see people exercising with masks on because it's supposed to stop a virus that it cannot possibly stop. It's absolute lunacy, but the mask has become a political symbol. It's right. become a symbol of I'm either in defiance by not wearing it, or I'm wearing it because I'm showing that I am willing to subject myself and I'm not one of them. And so it no longer represents anything scientific anymore.
Exactly. And this is what a lot of this conversation has devolved into. And, why the people screaming trust the science are in fact ignoring the science. It's ridiculous in and of itself. But on to take that into the conversation of what the technocratic side of this, because I know we're limited on time. The technocratic conversation for me is really interesting. The Great Reset. I know you've covered this as well. And I think just give me your thoughts on where you think this is all going in regard to the Great Reset and how these things are tying into it. I've talked a lot about the Converging Technologies document that was put out in 2002. They've done it again in 2013, 2016, where they're openly talking about converging nanotechnology, biotechnology, and to change human evolution. That was a stated discussion. So here we are at a moment where we're using lipid nanoparticles and new experimental mRNA injections, and every facet of our health is being revolutionized in the middle of a pandemic, which makes no sense. And they're using nanotechnology in almost every facet. The nanoworms is only the recent discussion there. So I just kind of wanted your thoughts on where you see that going.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and honestly, I don't know as much about it as you do. That's one part of the story that I have not investigated as much as I should, and probably because I'm not looking as far ahead as you are, perhaps, in this, where it's heading in terms of that. But certainly, I think if you look at where we were for the last 20 years in terms of this, the development of not only the vaccines associated with this, but the actual viruses themselves, as we were talking about gain of function, it shows you that the people who are in charge of these projects projects, right, who are dreaming up ways in which to subdue populations or to control populations, right, that whether they think they're being nefarious or not, right, they have a very different view of what is moral and ethical for humans to endure and go through than we do. Right? There is a huge divide here. And so the question becomes, who's in charge? Who gets to be in charge, right? Why do I, as a taxpayer, have to pay for someone to do experimental things that ultimately could destroy me? Where's the accountability where I say, I don't want this, right? And you're not allowed to do this. So I think this is the result, and maybe this is a little more political than where we're supposed to go with this, but I think it's the result of a bureaucratic state, right? We have this enormous growing bureaucratic state and bureaucracies that actually run the country. Right. Democracy does not exist. A republic does not really exist. Representatives do not really exist and have no power. They're all feckless at this point. And so who's actually in charge? And I think that's one thing that this moment can allow for, is not just talking about gain of function, but the things you're talking about, these issues that you're talking about nanoparticles, nanotechnology and all that. What do we as a population say is acceptable and what is not? And at what point do we take back the authority to say, you will not do this?
Exactly. I mean, and I wouldn't even say that's, the bureaucratic overview you discussed there is basically the same thing from a worldview. I mean, that's what we're seeing happen with the World Economic Forum, with the WHO. I mean, this is what Professor Michel Chostovsky pointed out, is what he sees as the building of the world government that's happening right in front of us under a guise of health, And so, yeah, I agree completely. I think that's
in Australia, they keep calling it the New World Order. I mean, it's insane that they're just using this terminology like, nobody cares. There's a lot of us who care.
Yeah. And then, and even going after that and saying, but that's still a fake news story, as she says it verbally.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. Well, so let's go ahead and finish off with a touch on censorship, right? Which I think is a really important one, which can bring us into two things to finish off with. I want to hear about your new platform that's been being built, but I would be upset with myself if I did not ask one question before we get past this. I recently just saw on a August, panel you had with a group that you opened up about the conversation about what happened with your coverage of Pizzagate and how you ended up sort of being forced off the air for a minute. Now, if you don't want to get into it, that's understandable, but I'd like to hear, if you want to briefly go into that and tell us what happened there and why you were, forced off social media and so on. I just think people are really interested. And I do see it tying into the censorship of today.
It does tie into the censorship of today. What I would say about it is, when I began, and by the way, I was not a guy who led Pizzagate coverage. I was not the primary person covering this. Right. It was all over the internet. It was trending on Twitter at the time. This was all the way back in, 2016, the end of 2016, headed towards the election, and this issue came up. And then media had covered it. CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, everybody had talked about this story about Pizzagate. But the problem was what they were saying about it was that it all came from Macedonian sheep farmers who were planting stories on Facebook about Hillary Clinton eating children. This is literally what was being said. And to be honest with you, as a reporter, I didn't really care, that they were saying this. It didn't really matter. But people kept reaching out to me and saying, hey, you should look into the story because they're not being honest about this. So I looked into it, and what I found was, all these media organizations were lying about it. It did not come from Macedonian sheep farmers who were planting stories on Facebook. It came from John Podesta's emails. And it was, candidly, it came from John Podesta's emails that were leaked, WikiLeaks released them, and then pedophiles on 4chan reading those emails said, hey, you guys should pay attention to what this guy's writing because these are words that we use. Now, does that mean John Podesta is a pedophile? No, that doesn't mean he's a pedophile. But it certainly means that the origin of the story was not what media was telling us it was. So all I did was one story that said, what you're being told is not true. Here's where it came from. And the result of that was, we're going to shut you down. You're not allowed to speak. You're not allowed to do anything. In fact, but this is what was so interesting was my employer at the time, I was working for CBS in Atlanta, and my employer at the time said, you can continue to work for us. You can continue to be our main anchor. You can continue to be the face of our station every single night, but you can't be on social media. And so they literally revoked all of my social media, had it go dark. We took it all down for 1 year figuring out what to do. But for me, that was a huge awakening because I realized, why would they not care if I'm on their air, but they do care about social media. They care about Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. And so for me, it was a real awakening of there's something else coming here, right? That this is where the real battle is going to take place. And so that's why 3 years ago, we started working on this project, Sovereign, which was at the time we called it ISE. But Sovereign, the concept of the platform was, we've got to build something that does two things. One, it protects against censorship, right? Censorship coming from these big tech companies that are kicking everybody off, throwing everybody off of their platforms. That's first. And then second is the protection from the big tech companies actually shutting down anyone who's a competitor. Because you remember those poor suckers over at Parler who thought that they were operating in a free market, thought that they could build a better Twitter and put it up online. They did. They were the number one app on the App Store. And then they got deleted by three companies, Amazon, Google, and Apple. Just took them down. So what we've done is we built a platform that, as we're building it, it's going to go onto the blockchain. And it's going to be set up in a way that it cannot be censored and it cannot be taken down by big tech companies. They cannot remove us. And we are set up in a way that allows us also to protect our users. We have a constitution that's being built into our system that gives users and content creators a bill of rights that says you have rights on this platform. We don't see it as, hey, it's our platform, we do what we want. No, it's yours. It belongs to you. You have a right to speak in this country. You have a right to speak on this planet. It's not just an American right. It's a human right. And we plan to fight for that.
I like that a lot, actually. That's the first I've heard of that. I like the difference. That's fantastic. And I think that there can't be enough of this. And I really, I've been posting on ICE before it became Sovereign for a while now. And I do think there's the fact that Ben is standing up and putting stuff on the line for everyone to continue to speak truth needs to be respected and acknowledged. I mean, there's a lot of, I think the point I've been saying that is that people in your position, people don't realize how many attacks and negativity and deception and manipulation happens around what you're doing because you're taking this step. That brings to mind somebody I bring up often, somebody like a Dr. Jensen out there that decides to speak up and say, hey, here's the truth of what's going on. And he's been proven correct and he's still being attacked, you know? Yeah. So we need to recognize how hard that is to do in this time. So this is an important thing. And I appreciate that you're doing this because we need to keep as many platforms as possible out there for people to keep spreading the truth.
Absolutely. So
I want to finish off by asking you in general about where you see all of this going with these kind of platforms out there, with the technocratic future coming. And, you know, where do you see these next steps coming? Because we see them attacking us right now, social media Absolutely. Platforms left and right. What's your thoughts on where this is going?
Well, first of all, I believe truly that the more platforms there are out there, the better. The problem is that if there's too many that have no connection to each other, it creates exhaustion for the public, right? Where do I go? So one thing that we want to absolutely be is a platform that is open. We're not behind a subscription service. You don't have to pay to see any of our content. You can just go on and post just like you would on Facebook. So I think that's positive. But we want to actually partner with anybody who's out there, any companies that are out there, to promote what they're doing as well, because we need to at least have synergy between us. Otherwise, we're going to be a bunch of little islands that get blown off the map if possible. And mostly it's going to be through the character attacks, right? We know they can't take us down because technologically we're building in a way we can't be taken down. But can they try to destroy your character? And here's the thing, right? I'm not afraid of that. I've had my name besmirched and dragged through the mud, you know, for so many years, just years and years of it. And I'm not afraid of it. It's the reality. But the fact is this, there is a cultural battle happening now that has taken a new twist. It's moving to a new place. And I'll finish with this. Let's Go Brandon, right, is the anthem now of a subculture in America that believes in two things, I believe. Number one, that they have no respect for the authorities around them who they believe do not have their best interests in mind, right, that are harming them in many ways. But number two, it also represents the disdain for the gaslighting. It is a recognition that we've been gaslit by big tech and gaslit by media companies who will listen to one thing. And what are they saying? Oh, I hear it. It's Let's Go Brandon. Right? And they'll lie to your face. And to be completely honest with you, I don't actually believe that the reporter who made that mistake did it on purpose. I actually think that she was so insulated from this movement that was taking place in stadiums around the country, she just didn't even know what it was. And so she heard it and just came up with the first thing she could think of because she just couldn't place what it was. I think that's actually what happened, but it represents something different, right? It represents the idea that you are going to tell me that what I'm hearing with my ears is something that it's not. You didn't verify it. You didn't find out what they were actually saying. You simply made a proclamation, right? Mm-hmm. And even though I can hear what they're actually saying, you know, that shows a lack of regard for me as a listener. Don't believe your eyes. Don't believe your ears. Believe us. And so I think that's, we're hitting this moment, this cultural shift that says there are so many people who say, we're just not going to do this anymore. We're not going to play along anymore. And I want us as Sovereign, and by the way, people can go to sovereign.media, sign up for their username. We launch on the 25th of October. But the goal of Sovereign is to be a part of that movement that just says, we've had it, and we're not going to play this game anymore.
Absolutely. Well put. And I'll include all that in the show notes for people to check out the website and sign up. And this is worth that moment. You know, I'm mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore, right? We're all going to stand up. And I think that's why this is so important, because whether you do it on a channel like this or whether you do it on a new platform, we all need to start taking a stance and not giving up ground. So thank you so much for being here today, Ben, and hopefully we'll have you back on soon.
Ryan, thanks for having me on, and can't wait to see your channel, because you are the only guy, by the way, who really has been on ISE.media other than myself. Can't wait to see your channel over at Sovereign.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as always, everyone out there, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.